From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with the author Michelle Hunnevin, whose new novel is Search, published by Penguin. Michelle Hunnevin is the author of four other novels, Round Rock, James Land, Blame, and Off Course. Her books have been New York Times notable books and finalists for the Los Angeles Times Book Prize and the National Book Critics Circle Award. She is the recipient of a Whiting Award for Fiction, a Guggenheim Fellowship, and a James Beard Award for Feature Writing with Recipes, and received her Master's in Fine Arts from the Iowa Writers Workshop. She teaches at University of California, Los Angeles. Here's a little information about her new novel, Search. Dana Potowski is a restaurant critic and food writer and a longtime member of a progressive Unitarian Universalist congregation in Southern California. Just as she's finishing the book tour for her latest bestseller, Dana is asked to join the church search committee for a new minister. Under pressure to find her next book idea, she agrees and resolves to secretly pen a memoir with recipes about the experience. That memoir, Search, follows the travails of the committee and their candidates and becomes its own media sensation. Dana had good material to work with. The committee is a wide-ranging mix of Unitarian Universalist congregants, and their candidates range from a baker and microbrewmaster pastor to a reverend who identifies as both a witch and an environmental warrior. Ultimately, the committee faces a stark choice between two very different paths forward for the congregation. Although she may have been ambivalent about joining the committee, Dana finds that she cares deeply about the fate of this institution, and she will fight the entire committee if necessary to win the day for her side. I hope you enjoy this interview with Michelle Hunnevin. I wanted to ask you this question, and I was hoping it wouldn't be offensive. And then you have this great line in the book. At one point, your main character, Dana, comments, "I had another pang then, a literary one. Was this committee, this cast of characters, sufficiently compelling for a book?" And I was just, the reason that the question came up at all was Search was named one of the 10 most anticipated fiction books of 2022 by Kirkus. And that was just interesting to me that a novel about the work of a church search committee would be, you know, and I loved it. It was absolutely wonderful. But if I had just picked up the book and read the back cover, I might not have expected it to be one of Kirkus's most anticipated. So, what do you think about that?
Well, frankly, Shayla, when I would tell people what my new book was about, I would laugh sometimes almost hysterically because I thought, who wants to read a book about a church search committee? You know, what am I doing?
And well, I have to think Kirkus was anticipating it, at least in part, because it was written by you.
So. Well, thank you. It's a very common response that people have said, I had no idea what to expect from this book, but it turned out to be really compelling and I really liked reading it. So it surprises people that a church search committee could embody so much drama.
Yes. Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me.
But it could. And you know, it's interesting because as I read, I realized a lot of things that are very compelling about this subject. And part of it is, apart from the search, church has a lot of conflict potential. You know, just
yes.
Even internally within ourselves, how we feel about our churches, how we feel, you know, I mean, Dana has all kinds of insecurity, but she's honored to be asked to do this. She's also fairly opinionated. She's a complicated character, an interesting character. And I think church brings out all of those things.
Well, to go back to that quotation where she said, you know, are these people going to be interesting enough for a novel? That's actually how I felt at that stage when I was writing it, because these characters came to me. They're not based on anybody I know. And it was sort of like how I am when I'm actually on a church search committee and I walk into a room and there are these strangers and I'm a little intimidated. Every matriculation kind of stirs up fear and excitement in me. And I look around and I go, who are these people? You know, and do I belong here? And I'm critical, you know, that's my response to fear. And then this person is you know, a special ed teacher, and this person is the head of the analytic community, and this person is a landscape architect, and they begin to bloom as people.
Yeah.
And that's an experience I've had with almost every committee I've been on. I start out kind of feeling like I have to hold myself apart. And then it's like, which person do I want to be my new best friend? You know, and it really.
So tell us a little bit about that. What is your work like in that aspect, in that realm? Why have you been on so many search committees?
Well, I haven't been on that many. I've only been on one search committee. And once I was on the committee to select the search committee.
Oh, okay.
But now one of my fascinations came with, I've been around searches, big searches for senior ministers, and they're highly confidential and nobody will tell you what goes on. So I just wanted to be privy to a search committee. So I made one up. Okay. And there was lots of information. There's, you know, whole handbooks and guides for search committees. And they read like these preemptive screeds of how to avoid all these problems that search committees have had. Like
through the ages.
Through the ages. Like search committees should be between like 5 and 7 people. So I made a search committee of 8 because that's an immediate problem. That's too big. It's too unwieldy.
And we both know which ones should have been left off. No, I'm kidding.
Which 3 should have been left off. Right, yeah,
exactly. So now, at one point, Dana worries. So she does this partly in order to have material for her next book because she's a little bit blocked. So this brings up an interesting point. She thinks to herself, or she actually in a lot of this, and I have a question about this too. She sort of addresses the reader, but she says, "Was I already breaking the covenant's confidentiality clause by secretly gathering material for a book?" And I thought that was an interesting framework of another kind of problem that a lot of writers have, particularly writers of memoir, but telling other people's stories or telling stories that involve other people who are not aware that they're going to be included. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I really tried to make my characters original. Some of them have elements of people I've known, or they've had an experience. I've stolen experiences from people, but you know, having been fictionalized once myself, I know that jolt of recognition, and you get over it quickly enough, but it's unpleasant. And I really didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but I'm sure I will anyway, because people see themselves in the weirdest things. I mean, I've had people accuse me of using them as the template for a character when they were the farthest person from my mind for this character. So you can't control it, really.
But what would you say to the writer who's worried about it? Oh, you know, I'm going to be writing about my sister-in-law, or I'm going to be writing about my nephew. Like, what would you say?
Well, I'm sort of hard-hearted. I sort of say it's your material. Right. You know, if they don't like it, they can write their own book.
That's right. Right. Okay. Yeah, I've heard that perspective before.
I wrote a piece that was published in the Paris Review Daily called "You've Been Fictionalized." And when I was writing it, I talked to a woman who's in charge of copyrights, a really brilliant woman. I wish I could remember her name. But she told me that it's assumed that writers write from their life and that they use their material that of what has happened to them. And so with that basic assumption, not that they're making it up, but that they're using their life material, it's pretty hard to like sue somebody for using another person. It's not hard to be hurt. It's hard to get remunerated for that hurt.
Mm. Okay. All right. Well, let's also talk about the thing I mentioned a minute ago. Sometimes Dana addresses the reader directly, but maybe she's just addressing her writing. I'm not sure, but talk a little bit about that. And maybe just talk about her as a narrator and your style of presenting her.
Yeah, well, Dana is writing the book that you're reading, if you're the reader. And so there are these little places where she makes references to it, like her husband, for example, has told her, "Don't put me in this book." But then when he reads the book, he says, "No, maybe you should put me in the book." So he doesn't like it because he was in her former book and she said that, you know, he's a man who kisses his chickens and he's a lawyer, and some lawyer in the office yelled down the hall, "Oh, it's the man who kisses his chickens." And that made him really self-conscious. So he doesn't. But for the record, my husband does occasionally kiss our chickens.
Well, but that's in the contract. You're allowed to write about him.
Exactly.
Let's see. Early on, you mentioned Dana's cooking classes and her work as a restaurant reviewer. And food is a big part of this book. Even if there weren't recipes at the end, I would find food to have been a big part of the book as I read along. But then at the end, you include recipes of the meals that were in certain scenes. And I thought that was awesome. It's really popular now to sort of blend recipes and food, just sort of the appreciation of food in literature. So I wonder how you felt about that. And also, what do you think about that as a trend?
Well, in the 90s, I won a James Beard Award, and I won it for feature writing with recipes. And that always cracked me up because the with recipes part sort of took a little bit away. You know, maybe this isn't a serious feature, but it also gave a little something, like a little bonus. You not only have the feature, you have a recipe. So I always kind of wanted to write a novel that had that kind of light touch to it. I mean, there are some people who will think, a novel with recipes, so it's not a serious literary novel because it has recipes. But at the same time, people seem to be really grateful for the recipes.
People love it. Yeah.
And I kind of got the idea also because there's a chef character in my second novel, James Land. And I went to a book group and they'd made the dishes that I described in the books. Oh, and I was really touched and I thought, well, so I'll help him out with this one. I'll give him the recipes for
Have you made all these recipes?
Oh, yes. I tested them and tested them. You have no idea how many coconuts I hurled on my patio to make that buco pie.
You go into great detail about how to open the coconut, and it's hard, but it's worth it. Now, did the recipes sort of predate the scene that they were put in? Like, did you research what you wanted to have them eating, or did you just kind of like write along and think, okay, right now they're going to have this pie, and then you had to go looking for a recipe that you liked?
The second one. Yeah. Okay. And in some cases, I had to make up the recipe. There's a restaurant called Sorry Sorry Store. It's in the Grand Central Market in Los Angeles that makes this incredible buco pie. And I searched high and low for the recipe. I couldn't find it anywhere. So I had to make it myself. And I had to figure it out how to do it. And that took a long time and a lot of coconuts. And I finally did. And my husband recently brought me a slice of their buco pie. The first time in years that I've tasted it, and mine was better. I thought mine was better.
Now, in presenting your characters, and I'm going to make a generalization here, and I hope you don't mind, but you're sort of succinct up front. It's wonderful. You have this wonderful style that's kind of like, we're going to work our way through this together. And I'm just, first of all, going to tell you who these people are. So like, you're very succinct up front, or you were with the certain areas. Like, for example, Tom Fox was 64 when he came to the AUUCC 8 years ago. Everyone knew he wouldn't stay that long. Certainly not as long as his predecessor, the Reverend Dr. Sparlow Pleasant, who served for 28 years. Charlotte had never liked Tom Fox's sermons. And there's a lot of sort of like simple recitation of characteristics of them. But as the book goes on, we get to really know these characters so well, a lot through interactions, relationships, dialogue. Here's another, this is more of a detail thing. I'm trying to remember who this is describing. His glasses were opaque with fingerprints. His knee jumped up and down. I stifled an urge to still and smooth him, clothes, hair, and tick. So Yeah, I mean, you just do a wonderful job. You kind of present characters, but then you go deeper in, and then we get to see what Dana thinks, because she always thinks something, and then you get to see those relationships develop. I just wonder if you can talk a little bit about developing characters and also developing relationships between characters.
Well, that's really what the book was about, because there's actually so many characters. There's eight people on the search committee. There's ministers. There's ministerial applicants, the candidates. And I was interested in how you get to know characters, and especially in, like, how do you get to know job candidates? They would submit these things called ministerial records that were like enhanced CVs. You know, they not only had their experience and their education, but they had to write stuff about themselves. And I was interested in how character was revealed that way. And then that was the first stage. Then there were Skype interviews, or then there's a packet that's full of pictures and letters of references. Then there are the references. Then there's the actual meeting in person. So how you get to know these characters the way that a search committee gets to know their applicants, that really interested me. How do you get to know someone?
Yeah.
You know,
and as you've already said, you walk into that room and there's a certain defensiveness that makes you judge people before you get to know who your best friend's going to be. And you might be completely wrong, or you might be right. But
yeah, mostly you're completely wrong, because it's just a fear response.
Right.
And exactly. So I got to know the characters as I was writing them, as they presented themselves to me. And I mean, Jenny, for example, she constantly surprised. She stayed in character and got deeper and deeper, but I actually began to like her.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I'm not going to give anything away, but I will just say that you presented a softer version of her ultimately at the end, you know, and all of a sudden we got to see, you know, like you just kind of twisted the perspective a little bit, which was nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so I mentioned this before. Dana is insecure. She's feisty, and she's very, you know, sort of opinionated and clear-spoken. She likes secrets. But she's insecure, and I started making little notes about this. As far as being asked to be on the committee, I was thrilled to be asked. Then later she writes that she was flattered that the new minister wanted to get to know her, back when the new minister was Tom. And then she wrote something about how she was so not a powerhouse. And so, you know, it's interesting to have a character that's got insecurity, but also sees herself as quite competent and capable. She's not without her confidence, but she's just an interesting mix. So do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think that actually Dana, in any situation, you learn new things about yourself. And in this year-long association with seven people, some of whom she knows somewhat well and some of whom she doesn't know at all, she learned some things about herself. And one of the things that she learns about herself is how much she actually does care for the church. I mean, she starts out on this will be a book, it'll have recipes, it's a year-long thing, it's got a structure, you know, the search has very definite things it has to go through, so that will lend my book good structure. And then she finds out that she actually cares about the outcome of this committee and what happens.
Yeah.
And she's prepared to really fight tooth and claw to help it go in the way that she feels is the best way for it to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that she doesn't know how much she cares is kind of speaks to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
She surprises herself. She's not the most, she's critical, but like some critical people, she's not the most self-confident person.
And she's not a curmudgeon by any means. You know, I mean, I think she's always fairly politic. She's And part of the reason I see her as a little bit critical is because we have access to her thoughts.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So that's a little bit different. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, so now her work on the committee begins, as we said, as a desire to write something, and she's going to use this to write a book. Have you ever gotten blocked and had trouble coming up with your next idea?
Often I have the idea and then I get blocked. Like with my third novel, Blame, for a whole year, I couldn't decide where to place it. I thought of Boise, Idaho. I thought of Sacramento. I needed a big downtown hotel. And then I thought, well, Pasadena has a Green Hotel. You know, I could base it on that. And once I decided that, I was off and running. But, you know, I took a field trip to Sacramento. I did all sorts of research on Boise. And I thought it was a block, but I think it's a subconscious organizing itself. Mm. I've gotten less impatient with myself because I think that you need to get enough things. We're pattern-making creatures, and in order for the unconscious to structure something as big as a novel, it needs time, and it needs some pinpoints of information that it can start to, you know, crystallize around.
Well, so I think it's really valuable in a novel, well, in any kind of prose, I guess a memoir. It's always interesting when someone has a good mentor. That's always an interesting relationship to read about. And she has a good mentor in Sparlow. I mean, or did. I mean, most of those recollections are, I think, looking back. But in her case, you know, she went to seminary to become a minister. And then in the end, her journalism career took off and she had some questions about what direction she should go in. And Sparlow said, good ministers were rare, but excellent journalists were even more so. And they reached a larger audience. And then she says she never regretted a minute or cent spent at seminary. And she had chosen her first vocation. But to me, that was interesting that he said that to her, he being a minister and sort of a mentor to her. But I'm not asking about that particular moment between them, sort of more about the mentor relationship in a novel. What does that ever occur to you? Did you think about that as you were working on this?
A little bit, because I actually did not have that relationship. It was there are a few things in the novel that are wish fulfillment, like having two mini donks. I don't have them. I want them. My husband will not agree to them.
He has his chickens.
There's only so much livestock we can put in our backyard. But so I pictured this closer relationship. I was close to the minister that he's sort of based on. But it was fun to write a closer, more ideal relationship of somebody who tells you their life experience and really gives you a good framework for your own future. I did use a book that the minister had written to get bits of wisdom from him. Mm-hmm. So I did think about that. I actually don't feel that I've ever had a close mentor, and it's something that I would love. I have a really close writing partner who I really respect and admire, the writer Mona Simpson.
Oh, wow.
And that's close to mentorship.
She used to live here, I think. Did she ever live in Burlington, Vermont?
I don't think so.
I feel like I know Mona Simpson's work, but I'm maybe mixing her up with somebody else's bio. But I thought maybe she had some tie to Vermont. Okay, that's great. Let's see. Oh, this is just about conveying information. But sometimes when I'm reading a book and they're throwing around acronyms, I get a little frustrated because I don't know what they're talking about. And then at a certain point, you had a character say, what is this RE thing that Jenny mentioned? And then they all say religious education and Sunday school. And I was like, I was just wondering the same thing. And I appreciated you putting it in dialogue. And I wondered, you know, do you have any thoughts about how you convey information for readers without it being so, you know, obvious that that's what you're doing? That was really perfect.
Well, I have a very useful character named Curtis in the book. And Curtis has just been coming to the church for 2 months. He's formerly an evangelical Christian. In fact, he's still pretty much an evangelical Christian, but he's gay and was kind of, he got disillusioned with his church and came over to the Unitarians because that's where his husband is. And he knows nothing about the church. But somebody on the committee to select the search committee thought that it might be good to have fresh eyes. So he asks all the questions that the audience might ask. You know, what does this stand for? How do you do this? He's a very useful character that way.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Very helpful. Yeah. Now, speaking of dialogue, you write a lot of scenes with people together in a room in this book. And it's great. It's very snappy and efficient and funny and never bloated or unnecessary. So I wonder, you know, I mean, it's a real skill being able to write good dialogue. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that. Good dialogue is not like spoken dialogue, I think, but.
No, it's very different from spoken dialogue. And it's, there are a couple tricks I have. Like, I never answer questions. Somebody asks a question, I never answer it directly. I don't know why that works, but it works. Otherwise, I used to study, this is a funny thing to admit, but I found a book about the Andy Griffith Show, and it had scripts in it. And the scripts were fantastic. And that's what I studied for dialogue, I have to admit it.
Wow.
And when my first book came out, somebody said, her dialogue reads like a sitcom. And I'm like, yes, yes.
You just can't add the canned laughter. It'd be perfect.
Exactly. I mean, some of those TV writers are just brilliant. They're just brilliant.
Yeah.
And they're a good place to learn dialogue.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's great to know.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can find Andy Griffith scripts. That's hard to say. Andy Griffith scripts. But I suppose we could find anything on the internet if we look hard enough. Let's see. Okay. At one point, a character named Sam says, every time I open my mouth, I get in trouble. And he's talking about expressing himself in the new atmosphere of political correctness. He has said something about race or gender, not something terrible, just mixing something up that in a previous decade would have been very benign, but he gets called to the carpet for it by somebody. So anyway, how do you approach this as you write? And do you step very carefully? There was another line, my editor says lesbians are the new white males. And I was like, ooh, is she going to get in trouble for that?
Well, it was a lesbian who told me that line, so I thought maybe I wouldn't get in trouble, but maybe I will.
I don't have a problem with it. I'm just curious how you approach these moments. And do you catch yourself and say, maybe I won't write that?
Yes.
I want to talk a little bit about humor and writing humor. I loved Dana's adverse feelings about the bell choir. That just cracked me up again and again and again. She hates the bell choir. But I wonder if you can talk a little bit about including humor and just being funny on the page. Is that anything that can be learned, or do you think you either have it or you don't?
Well, I remember the first time I ever read a short story out loud, and I got about 3 sentences in and people started laughing. And I thought, I didn't know I was being funny. I thought I was being terse, and I thought I was being maybe a little sly, but I didn't realize I was being funny. I didn't realize, but I do sort of have a slightly comic bent, and it's nothing I really try for. It's just, life is funny.
Yeah. Yeah. But you have to know, well, and it sounds like you're not doing it on purpose. So what I was about to say might not be true. I was going to say you have to know how to present it, but it does depend on presentation because sometimes life doesn't come across as funny.
No, and I don't want to be too mean. I hope the members of bell choirs everywhere aren't too insulted. It's just Dana. It's not the world. It's Dana who doesn't like the bell choir.
No, I don't think anyone will be too offended. Okay. I always like to ask my guests if they have read anything lately that they would like to recommend to listeners. Any other books that you would say are great?
Well, if you want to read a writer who writes beautifully about food, a novelist, I love Brian Washington's work. He just got hired by the New York Times to be one of their food columnists. But his short stories have, he writes about food as a point of connection in a way that I really like and appreciate and think he does beautifully.
Excellent.
And I've been teaching food writing this quarter, so we've been reading Laurie Colwin, who's always just marvelous as a novelist and a food writer.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Did you know her?
I didn't know her, no. Sadly, but you feel like you do. When you read Laurie Colwin, you think you are reading cooking advice from your best friend.
Yeah, but also talk about funny, man. She was funny.
She is so funny.
She had a great book. I think it was her book about a backup band. She was singing in a backup band. Do you remember that?
No, I haven't read that one. I haven't read all of her novels.
That was funny. Anyway, sorry.
I bet. And I'm also teaching Willa Cather. I'm teaching Maya Antonia right now. And every time I read it, it's like I've forgotten what a luminous book it is. It's got some dated passages that we now have to discuss in the classroom and take apart. But it's just a deep, beautiful book that the more I read it, the more I see in it. You know, I'm so impressed by it.
It must be fun to, I don't teach, so it must be fun to go back to these texts, maybe not every single semester, but go back again and again and teach them and be able to see new things and hear students show you new things. And yeah.
Yeah.
What are you writing next? Do you know?
Well, I'm thinking of writing, and I've started it, Our Best Year, the book that Dana supposedly has written about. It's based on the year in my, I was a senior in high school, and I took over cooking dinner from my mother. And it improved our relationship about 1,000%, because she would come home exhausted, and then she'd have to cook dinner for the family. And then when I was cooking, she would come home exhausted and she could sit around and read the newspaper, read her book, or sit at the table and talk to me while I cooked. And it just really improved things. It gave her some leisure and she really deeply appreciated it. And for a year, we really got along. And then I went to college and it all fell apart.
Were you the oldest or did you have siblings?
I had a sister. An older sister, and she was living at home, but she was going to school and coming home late at night. So,
No, that's great. Is this going to be a memoir or will you write it as a novel?
I think I'll write it. I have to write it as a novel because I don't remember that much.
Oh, so you'll have to make stuff up.
Yeah, I have to make stuff up. Yeah. Okay. It might be written as another one of Dana's memoirs.
Okay. All right, I'm not going to give away the ending, but I am curious about what you believe to be a satisfying ending when you are writing a novel and what you try to accomplish either for your narrator or your characters or your readers. Like, is there anything that question brings to mind for you?
Well, I mean, you don't want to dot every I and cross every T, but you want to get enough of them done so that somebody isn't like, well, she left me hanging, you know. I think that you want someone to close the book with a sense of satisfaction and yet enough to think about. You don't want to close it so tightly. It's like, that's done, next.
Like all those Netflix shows. Yeah. It's like, okay, next.
Next, exactly. You want to, I want it to linger a little bit. And I want things to surprise, but also complete in a satisfying way. So endings are tricky. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I loved writing this ending. Mm-hmm. I kept getting new ideas for it. Like, I didn't know that there was going to be a scene between two of the main characters at the end. That was really a surprise. And,
yeah. When you finish a book and send it off to your editor, or maybe finish all your revisions and it's gone, it's going to be out. Do you still have ideas about it and keep thinking about it? Or are you able to kind of close that door a little bit?
Oh, gosh, I had a good idea for Search just yesterday. but too late. I'm pretty able to close the door. I'm pretty, especially since I tend to overwrite. I mean, I cut maybe 80 pages from Search. So I put in everything I wanted and then I had to winnow it out. I had a really marvelous editor, Ginny Smith at Penguin. And her suggestions were, she's so brilliant that she could contain the entire book and tell me, you need to take this thread backwards through the book and pull this one through to the end. And she just had it all in her head and could rearrange it and tell me about it in a way that was so much fun. And the book, I would follow her instructions and the book got better and better. It was a fantastic experience.
When someone's good at that, it just blows you away, right?
It blows you away. It's an art.
It really is, yeah. The name of the book is Search. It's coming out the end of April from Penguin, and I've been speaking with Michelle Hunnevin. Thank you so much. This was really fun to talk to you.
It was really fun to talk to you. I really appreciate it, Shayla.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was a new interview with Michelle Hunnevin. You can learn more about her work at michellehunnevin.com. This week's Write the Book prompt comes from the novel Search by Michelle Hunnevin, my guest. It's an exercise that the search committee has offered when they begin working with the consultant named Helen. Imagine your life as a movie that you've stepped out of to be here today. What's the title? The setting? The plot? Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. I would love your feedback about Write the Book. Let me know if you'd like me to interview certain authors, if you have events to announce. And also, I don't usually say this, but it occurs to me, let me know if you'd like certain writing topics discussed. You know, maybe there are things that I don't get to as often as you would like. We talk a lot about character and setting on this show. But if you've got certain subjects about your writing work that you would like me to ask my guests about, please send me an email. Be sure to tell your friends about Write the Book and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com, where you can get all the archived episodes. New and recent episodes of Write the Book are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Just subscribe to have them sent to your podcast app. A reminder to listeners who write, I do share a writing prompt each week, so be sure to check the archives of Write the Book if you'd like to find any that you may have missed. The email again is writethebook@gmail.com. You can also access the podcast and link to our social media presence at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. If you like the show, please rate it where you find it and talk about it with people who might enjoy. Up next at 5 o'clock, stay tuned for Feminist Frenzy, the radio show with a feminist agenda. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.